Hi, everybody. I didn't mean for that to happen. I thought everyone could join before I get in there. I guess not.
Hi, Rabbi Hirsch.
Hey, Joshua, how are you?
All right. How are you doing?
Thank God. Hanging in there, as we all are.
Mm-hmm. Hi, Charles. Hi, Brenna. Hi, everyone.
Hi.
Let's see. Okay. We'll start in a couple minutes and wait for people, latecomers, to come in, like the rabbi. I have all people have to have rachmanis on people who are late.
Nice to see you all.
Hey, Ed. Margie.
Hello.
Excuse me, I'm having my dinner.
Sure. No one's looking.
That's why we turned our camera off, because we're eating our dinner still.
People would prefer I turn my camera off. I can't.
Very laid back, Emma Core.
We'll eat in solidarity with you.
I'm eating too, so.
Yeah, and we don't want you to turn it off. It's like live streaming. You get to watch somebody do something an hour on end.
In the comfort of your own home.
Yeah, maybe you could sell it.
No, I mean, people go out to dinner together, after all, and watch each other eat.
That's true.
Okay, I think we'll start. 5 minutes is good. So I want to thank Rachel Glenn for bringing up at the board meeting shul and annual meeting to discuss this topic, because I was debating whether to do it, and then when she said it, I realized it's a good idea. So thank you for that suggestion, and I really enjoy preparing this class, because it was I found that there's a lot of entertaining opinions out there about the COVID vaccine and other issues surrounding COVID. So I'll share some of this stuff with you. I personally get many COVID questions because there's a lot of issues that come up during COVID that wouldn't come up in regular life. So for instance, last Pesach, so people were touting my book, Pesach Without the Pain, because there's all these leniencies that people during COVID needed to utilize, because during a regular year, it's very easy to keep Pesach for a lot of people. You live in Muncie, you live in Brooklyn, you live in Lakewood. The stores are packed with Pesach goods. You can buy anything you want. You have plenty of people that help you prepare for Pesach. Most people do. They have big families, and it's very easy to keep Pesach. This year, people were isolated. It was hard for them to get the products they need. There's a lot of issues that people had to deal with this year. So people on Facebook and other social media were touting my book, and I was like, you don't get it. I actually wrote that for a regular year, not just for COVID, but that's what ended up happening. That's the kind of things that the questions we get this year. But there were a lot of serious issues that came up this year because of COVID. And I really think one of the main lessons is to learn is that Torah is not simple. Halakha is not black and white. And that's really the theme I want to bring out tonight from COVID, the vaccine. Halakha is not black and white. Halakha doesn't tell you what to do necessarily. Halakha is very gray sometimes, and purposely, because it depends on situations. There's certain situations where this halakha would apply. A different situation, another halakha would apply. And it's not just because of COVID. It's because of every aspect of life. People are in different phases of life at certain times. Different things going on in their personal lives. And that's how I try to answer Shiloh's. you can't be a rabbi, in my opinion, and just read a book and say this is the answer. Every situation is different. It takes an understanding of the halacha to know when you could be lenient and when you could be stringent, when you should be stringent. So I think that COVID brings this out very much. And I think that's one of the good things that came out of this craziness, is that there's a little more nuance when it comes to halacha. It's not something that's black and white. Some of the questions that I got, people were not happy when we decided to close the shul. That was something that people were upset about. And in Israel, a lot of people would say, I mean, I heard this fear, one of the entertaining things I heard. It's sad, but it's entertaining. There's a Gemara that says, the words of Torah do not stain a person unless they kill themselves over it. So normally you understand, I always understood that to mean that you have to really put your effort into studying Torah. Like you really, like we use the term very loosely, kill yourself. But people are actually using it literally, that you have to go to yeshiva to learn Torah during COVID, even though you're going to catch and you might die, but you have to go study Torah. I found that hysterical, but I also found that very sad. And there was actually a shiur given by Rav Asher Weiss. I saw a few of his shiurim. It's very interesting. He's a big rabbi in Israel. He's a posek. He wrote a few tshuvos for him, and he's a halacha expert. And a lot of people in America ask him questions. So we actually have to give an entire class explaining that this doesn't mean you have to literally kill yourself. It's because people take it literally. And I was like blown away. But I did receive some complaints from people, and they said, look at the Holocaust. The Holocaust, people kept Torah despite being a life or death issue. This is not the same level of life or death. We should go to shul. We need to pray to God. I think that's a lot of borders on religious fanaticism. And I'll explain it. I really think that it's wrong approach, and I'll explain it tonight why that I think that's the case. Same thing with masks. Masks is something that's the opposite. I think people take it too lightly. The mask is a responsibility. I went down to my lobby in my building. I sometimes run out of my house and I forget COVID. I forget I don't put on a mask. And I ran downstairs and a guy gave it to me. He said, "How can you not have a mask?" And I didn't have anything to say. He was totally right. I should have been wearing a mask. It's not just about you. It's about other people. But there's a lot of anti-maskers out there who come up with these theories that are just amazing. I think that person, besides anything else, for themselves, they should take responsibility for other people. I think it's a very important thing to consider. And the vaccine as well. Vaccine is a very complicated topic. It doesn't have to be very complicated, but there are issues that not everyone takes into consideration. But we're going to discuss tonight what the issues are, and what the right approach, in my opinion, is to whether one should take the vaccine and what approach it should take to taking the vaccine. So I also heard another entertaining clip I got from a rabbi who was a Sephardi rabbi. He was very, if you ever heard Sephardi Rabbi Bonham speak, they're very clear and concise, and they're to the point, and they just say what they believe without any frills, without any embellishing, just tell like it is. So this rabbi gets on, you know, very, very confident, and says, it's absolutely prohibited to take the vaccine. It's absolutely prohibited. And he gives a proof. His proof was from Moshe Feinstein's, who's an Ashkenazi, by the way, Moshe Feinstein's tshuva on Chalav Yisrael milk. I was like, wow, I got to hear this one. Chalav Yisrael milk is telling about the vaccine. So he said that the reason why Moshe Feinstein says Chalav Yisrael milk is kosher is because the companies will get fined by the FDA if they caught selling pig milk. So based on that, what Moshe Feinstein says, you could drink cow's milk because the companies are afraid to get fined by the FDA. He says, but the Pfizer, all these pharmaceutical companies are not going to be fined by the government. They have total immunity from prosecution. So they have no responsibility regarding the vaccine, and therefore it's absolutely prohibited to take the vaccine. That was he said. And I was like, wow. I mean, there's so many things wrong with that. It's amazing. But one of the things that's simple is that's not what Moshe says about milk. Someone asked him, he said, the fine is $75. I mean, who cares? It's not going to be incentive. So there's plenty of other reasons why Chol Bishol, a regular milk, is not doesn't have to be Chol Bishol. He says, we know. I mean, it's like, you got to be an idiot to think that there's pig milk in there. It's like, everybody knows that there's cow's milk. It's like obvious. And the fact is that the companies have their own incentive to do it. I mean, there's a lot of reasons why that beyond just the fact of paying a fine to the government. The fact is, Pfizer, if something goes wrong with their vaccine, it's not like they're going to be scot-free. They do have some accountability. It's like there's nothing. But I just think it's a very strange comparison. But this is what brings out the best in people, I guess. But the justifications are very hard to understand. So we'll share this. I'll share my screen. So this is where everyone starts when it comes to the COVID vaccine. It's the rules of danger. The rules of danger. So Connor. So let's go. So this is the Rambam in Hilchos Rotzeach. That means murder, laws of murder. And then he brings these laws of murder in the same halachas. He also calls it the laws of preventing death. So does anyone want to read in English number 4? Can someone volunteer to read? Who could see the screen?
I'll do. No, go ahead, Margie.
Okay.
I'll do another one.
Oh, let me explain before you start. This halacha that he's bringing is based on the halacha of Micah. Micah is a fence around your roof. You have to put a fence on your roof. And the reason is that the Torah says, because you're not full enough in a minute, that maybe someone's going to fall off the roof. So therefore, you have to have a roof rails around your roofs to make sure no one falls off. And then he builds on that from this halacha.
Okay. Says, this requirement applies to a roof and similarly to any place that might present a danger and cause a person to stumble and die. For example, if a person has a well or a cistern in his courtyard, he must erect a sand wall 10 hand breadths high around them or make a cover for them so that a person will not fall in and die. Similarly, it is a positive mitzvah to remove any obstacle that could pose a danger to life and to be very careful with these matters, as Devarim 4:9 states, beware for yourself and guard your soul. If a person leaves a dangerous obstacle and does not remove it, he negates the observance of a positive commandment and violates the negative commandment, do not cause blood to be spilled.
Can you read number 5 also, please?
Our sages forbade many matters because they involve a threat to life. Whenever a person transgresses these guidelines, saying, I will risk my life, what does this matter to others? Or I am not careful about these things. He should be punished by stripes for rebelliousness.
Okay, so this is the Rambam saying basically 2 things. This is, he's saying, number 1, when you have a dangerous situation, you need to avoid it. Number 2, he's saying that you have to prevent the danger from happening to begin with. That's what roof guardrails do. They prevent, even though you're not in danger. So preventing and avoiding danger is what someone has to do. So if you look, Shulchan Aruch says a similar thing. Anyone please want to read the English? It's very similar to what the Rambam says. From both the roof, both the roof.
I'll try. Somebody else do it.
I can.
Go ahead.
Both a roof or anything dangerous where it's probable that someone will stumble upon and fall. For example, if there was a well or a hole in his yard, whether there is water in it or not, one is obligated to make an embankment 10 hand breadths high or to cover it, lest a person fall into it and die. Likewise, one has a positive duty to remove and guard oneself of any life-threatening obstacle. As it is said, beware and guard your soul. If one did not remove said obstacles, one has canceled a positive commandment and transgressed, quote, do not bring blood guilt.
The last one too, please.
The sages prohibited many things because of danger to a person.
Okay, just stop there. So he gives different examples which really don't apply today because a lot of these things are either they thought they were dangerous back then and they really aren't dangerous, or they just are not dangerous nowadays at all. So the examples they give are not necessarily relevant. The point is there's a principle. If we know something's dangerous, then one is not supposed to engage in those in that behavior and should avoid it and should prevent it from happening. This is a class I found on Safaria, but here we go. This is what I want. So someone could read the Aruch HaShulchan here. This in English, there are many things.
There are many things that the sages forbade due to concern of danger. Anyone who violates this and says, what claim have others on me if I risk my own life? Or I do not mind this. The Rambam says he should be lashed for disobedience. His intention is not that this is just a rabbinic ordinance, but in truth, this is a Torah level prohibition, and we don't give the lashes given for violating a Torah prohibition, just as we don't give these lashes for many violations.
Okay, so what the Aruch HaShulchan is saying is that he makes it more serious. It sounds like from the Rambam, it's only issued to Rabbanan, it's only rabbinical, but he says it's actually biblical. And it makes sense. I mean, this is a very serious issue. The Torah takes this very seriously. A person should not put themselves in danger. The question is, what does it mean, put yourself in danger? I mean, it's hard to define that. Some say it's logic. Some say, you know, what does logic mean? I mean, everyone's different logic. Some have, you know, the general populace's opinion about something. So what about driving over the speed limit? Is that called sakana? Is that called putting yourself in danger? This is a question I was in the show of Heinemann Paskin for us. He said that you can't drive more than 9 miles. I can go, I think he said based on studies, said I think 9 miles or the speed limit, 55 to 64 or something like that. I don't know exactly what he said, but he basically said you're not allowed to drive over 65. So is that called a sakana? I don't know. What about you eat really unhealthy food? Is that called a sakana? You know, smoking. Smoking is a famous question. There's some opinions that say smoking is called suicide. It comes under the prohibition of suicide. Rabbi Yosef and Moshe Feinstein were very lenient. They had mercy on the people who smoked, and they said, "Shalom, Pesach Hashem, God will protect them." But it's not so simple. I mean, smoking is very dangerous, and we know that right now. What about bungee jumping? What about, you know, jumping out of airplanes? People do white water rafting. You know, just different behaviors. Mountain climbing. My brother-in-law is a mountain climber. You know, is that permissible or prohibited? So basically, it's hard to define. We'll see that there's a reason why it's hard to define this question. But the bottom line, when it comes to COVID, we're not really capable of determining whether this is dangerous or not. We're able to determine that the sickness is dangerous. We see a lot of people dying. We see a lot of people getting sick and having health problems that are serious. That we see. In terms of the vaccine, we don't know. We don't know if it prevents it, because not unless we're a scientist and we've done the studies about it, and we don't know if we're you know, if it's how effective it is and whether it's if there's any risk. We know from anecdotal evidence, but we don't know personally. We're believing other people. So that's where there's many places in the Gemara that explains that. No, this is not what I want. Explains that there's a guideline here. Here we go. So here. So this is a Mishnah. But Mishnah Berurah explains that this is like eating on Yom Kippur. So I want to read number 11, please.
Sure, I'll read it, Rabbi. And one doctor says that he does need, etc. If that doctor is more distinguished in knowledge than others, one should take his words into account and feed the ill person, even though the ill person and the first doctor constitute a majority against him. However, if the distinguished doctor says that the ill person does not need to eat, and two who are not distinguished says that he needs to eat, one should follow the opinion of the larger number and feed him.
So the Mishnah Berurah thinks something very interesting, and this is really important when it comes to laws of Yom Kippur. When someone says they they don't want to eat on Yom Kippur, or they do want to eat on Yom Kippur. How do you determine? People ask me this all the time. What is the determination? Can I eat on Yom Kippur? So Mishnah Berurah says that we listen to the advice of doctors, which is interesting because the doctors then define what the halacha is. If it's a majority of doctors, then we go after the majority because pikuach nefesh, saving a life, is really important. And we if we doubt whether we have a more distinguished doctor, or the issue should be more distinguished, or more number, quantity or quality, we go after both. We say if the person's more of a quality doctor, high quality doctor, and he says that he has to eat, we feed him. If the majority says that he has to eat, even though the other ones are more high quality, we still feed him. The reasoning for that is because pikuach nefesh is life or death situation. We're leaning about it. We say that he should eat because it's life or death versus a mitzvah. And even if it's the remote, we say it's remote. The Torah says you have to live, and you have to violate the Torah in order to live, and that's why that takes precedence. But you see, he says two criteria. He says if someone is the majority, and someone is distinguished. So we could argue, and this is what Rav Asher Weiss says, we could argue that the best, what we say in Hebrew, rov minyan or rov binyan, the majority of doctors and scientists, and the best doctors and scientists all agree that most of them agree that the COVID vaccine is effective and one should take the COVID vaccine. So even though I'm not a doctor or scientist, in halacha, he says in halacha, you have to go after this evidence to make this decision. And therefore, one is an obligation. Yeah.
I'm sorry. Question. If I lived in Russia or China, I wouldn't necessarily want to trust the quote unquote experts. And again, I'm not meaning to fall down a conspiracy and rabbit hole, but like the people who would argue in the United States say they don't want to trust the United States either. I do. But what's the halakhic argument, the response to folks like that?
So it's a good question. That's why it's not so simple. It's not so simple to apply this halakha of Yom Kippur to COVID because it's not clear. I mean, besides the fact that people don't trust the doctors, but there are other arguments. It's not like it's 100% sure that a person who takes the vaccine is going to be safe from the illness, and it could be that there's danger. So I'm not saying that's valid or not. I'm just saying that it's not just that they don't trust the doctors. It's that even it's not comparable to Yom Kippur 100% because Yom Kippur is either do the mitzvah or you die or you have a chance of dying. So we say don't take the chance of dying. Violate the mitzvah. But here the consequences are different. Here the consequences are, you know, you think that the doctors are right, you think the doctors are wrong. So, you know, it's not like a simple answer where we have the majority of doctors, you have when the Mishnah Berurah says doctors, you have to realize he's saying doctors that you can rely on. It's not like witch doctors, you know. He's not saying, well, if there's two witch doctors and there's one says he should eat, and there's one regular doctor who says he can't eat, then you go after the witch doctor. I mean, obviously not. So a person has to take, it's not like halacha defines these things. You have to take these things into your own account. You have to make your own decisions at the end of the day based on your evaluation. But the evaluation should be reasonable. So yes, you're right. If you live in China, it's reasonable. A reasonable person would say that the doctor is not reliable, and I can't rely on the majority of their opinions. But if a person in America really believes that, I mean, I don't agree with him, but I'm not saying he's the right to do whatever he wants. I would question whether that's a valid halachic argument, but because of the fact that he's making a incorrect evaluation of doctors based on the fact that there's a lot of evidence to the contrary. But I can't totally disprove him. You can't. That's what Rav Asher Weiss at the end says. He says he recommends strongly that someone should take the vaccine, but he can't mandate it. Does that make sense? So if you look at this in halacha, there's support for vaccination. So if you look over here, one second, I had another source sheet here. Yeah. So here's the someone want to read this, just one line. This is it's from the Tiferes Yisrael. Here, you see. Tiferes Yisrael lived in the late 1800s. He was a very big rabbi, but he wasn't a posek. He wrote a commentary on the Mishnah. Yochanan Bo is a very famous commentary on the Mishnah. Basically, the Mishnah, if everyone has a Kahati Mishnah, it's based on Yochanan Boaz, based on Tiferes Yisrael, based on this rabbi's commentary, because he clarified the Mishnah so, made it so clear that Kahati, who was a big rabbi in Israel, who wrote this, the large, many volume edition of the Mishnah, used the Tiferes Yisrael as a basis for his explanation. People use it because it's a very clear explanation. The Mishnah is many times not clear. Anyway, someone want to read read from even if. Someone want to read that? Even if not for the holy
mouths. I can read it. Yeah. Even if not for the holy mouths of Chazal that said this to us, we would already know this based on logic. As God is righteous in all his ways, and is pious in all his actions.
Talking about the Chassidim Umas Olam, the non-Jews who are righteous people.
Oh, okay. And this is from Tehillim. And we see a number of their pious ones who, aside from the fact that they acknowledge the creator of the world and believe that the Holy Torah is divine and perform kindness to Jews as well, some of them have done especially good things for everyone in the world. Like the pious Jenner, who invented the vaccine, which saves tens of thousands of people from illness, death, and the plague.
That's enough. So basically, this is acknowledgement that the creator of the vaccine, of the smallpox vaccine, is doing a wonderful thing for the world. I mean, it seems obvious, but that's what he says. He brings down in a Torah book. He writes this in Torah book. If you look over here, Tiferes Yisrael says another place about. A question was asked him about whether it's allowed to take the smallpox vaccine. So someone read it appears to me.
It appears to me that it is permitted to take the smallpox vaccine, even if one in 1,000 might die from the vaccine. It is nevertheless a more imminent danger to catch smallpox. Therefore, it is permitted to place oneself in remote danger to save oneself from imminent danger.
Okay, that's an excellent. So basically, see what he's saying here. He's saying that even if 1 in 1,000 might die from the vaccine, you should take the vaccine anyway because the you're putting yourself in a situation which is less dangerous to prevent yourself from a situation that's more dangerous later. And there's a lot of discussion on this topic whether one is allowed to do that. This certain Gemaras that say, for instance, you could violate a Torah commandment in the future now so that you don't violate something more serious in the future or someone else doesn't violate something more serious now. There's different proofs for this idea, but the idea is that even though there is a risk, but one should take the risk because the what's preventing is a greater risk of danger. And that's from the principle of the Rambam that one should avoid danger. If you look over here, Rav Asher Weiss quotes the Zera Emes, which is he believes is more definitive because he was actually halachic authority. So someone want to read this in his Sefer Shalos HaTshuvos Zera Emes.
Where did you want to read?
In number 6.
Oh, if I can see it. In his Sefer Shuls, I can't read the rest of that.
That's okay.
One of the great poskim of the generation recorded his debate with Rav Chaim Yehuda Giron over this question. Rav Giron argued that it was proper to refrain from vaccination as it had caused the death of several people, though the risk to any individual in the population was remote. The Zera Emes replied at length, examining whether a person may actively put himself at small risk of danger in order to avoid another potential danger. He concluded that vaccination was recommended as the relative risk of the disease is far greater than that of the vaccine.
Okay, so we see from here that there are some post-human actually dealt with the issue of a vaccine directly. And they said that, they basically said that it's the right thing to do, but he concludes that it's not, if you believe otherwise, you're not a heretic, you know, there's room for other beliefs. And that's why Rav Asher Weiss, one of the reasons Rav Asher Weiss says that one may, should, he encourages everyone to take the vaccine, but he says if someone doesn't want it, then he can't force them to take the vaccine. Okay, so anyway, that's the general approach to vaccines. There's another issue that we've dealt with, which is religious arguments. So we have three basic religious arguments. One is called Shomer Pesach Hashem, that God protects those who are naive, so to speak. Meaning God, if you're involved in a situation where it's dangerous and you don't realize it, so to speak, you decided to put yourself in a dangerous situation, some say, God will protect you. That's what the Gemara says. And this is the Gemara here in Masechta Shabbos. So I want to read this, the Gemara explains in the middle of the page.
The Gemara explains, on the third day of the week, what is the reason that one does not let blood? It is because the planet Mars is dominant during the even hours. Since it is a planet of blood and even hours are a bad omen, the combination gives cause for concern. The Gemara asks, on Shabbat Eve, Mars also dominates during the even hours. The Gemara answers, since the multitudes have already become accustomed to letting blood on Shabbat Eve, the verse, Lord protects the simple-hearted, applies in this case.
This is one example the Gemara brings for this, the Lord protects the simple-hearted. That God protects people in certain situations, even though they do something stupid, that God's going to help them, protect them from themselves, so to speak. So some argue that based on this, the one is allowed to go to without a mask, to a funeral, go to shul, whatever. One should realize that God protects those who are simple-hearted, and you just do what the right religious thing. God will protect you from yourself. That's one argument that's given. Another argument that's given is called Shomer mitzvah liyod avara. Someone read from the Gemara from here. The Gemara continues.
The Gemara continues in praise of those who perform mitzvot. Rav Hinana has left, Bar Edi said, anyone who performs a mitzvah as it was commanded, others do not apprise him of bad things as it is stated. He who keeps the commandments shall know no evil thing.
What are we, this one? Rav Asi.
Rav Asi and some say Rabbi Hanina said, even if the Holy One, blessed be He, issued a decree, He may abrogate it, as it is stated, for the word of the King has authority, and who may say to Him, what do you do? And although this indicates that even though the King, God, issued a decree, juxtaposed to it is the verse, He who guards the commandments shall know no evil thing. For one who observes mitzvot properly, the decree is abrogated and he will know no evil.
This is the second argument saying, if you do the mitzvot, then you're protected. You're protected from the danger. And then the third one is shluch mitzvot. Someone read from, so this case is a case where a kid honored his father, went to do something his father asked him to do. And he had intention to honor his father, and he fell off the ladder and he died. That's what Elisha ben Avruya became a heretic because of that same case. So Gemara says here, how is it possible? Someone read that. How is it possible? Actually, do me a favor. Read from. You can read from the beginning. The Gemara responds. You might as well just speak about the case.
I've lost the place.
Gemara responds from the beginning.
The Gemara responds, this is what Rabbi Yaakov was saying after witnessing the incident mentioned above. If it is so that there is a reward for performance of mitzvot in this world, it should be effective for the son and protect him so that he not come to contemplate idol worship and be harmed. Rather, one must conclude that there is no reward for performance of mitzvot in this world. The Gemara asks, but didn't Rabbi Elazar say, those on the path to perform a mitzvah are not susceptible to harm? How is it possible that this individual who was sent by his father to perform a mitzvah could have died? The Gemara answers, when they return, it is different. As after one has performed the mitzvah, one is susceptible to harm.
Well, therefore, we see from here, some saying from here that if you're a shliach mitzvah, if you're involved in a mitzvah, a messenger of a mitzvah, then you are absolved from harm. And therefore, people who go to shul, they're shliach mitzvah, they're representing the community, and therefore they won't be harmed. So these are the three arguments to make. Now, I think it's obvious that these three arguments are very poor arguments. First of all, the first argument, which is Shalom B'Shem Hashem, God protects those who are simple-hearted. It seems clear that, just as a starting point, this seems clear that these cases that the Gemara brings are the God protects the simple-hearted are Mars dominating during the eve now. I mean, that's something that's like superstition. I mean, it's not like something that's tangible. It's not saying you could walk off a cliff because God protects you. It's talking about weird, strange things that God protects you from that you didn't even know you need protection from in the first place. Or, you know, back then it was like a superstitious thing. It was a mazolos. So it's not talking about serious danger. It's talking about danger that's in the heavens. So that's just a simple explanation, argument against that. The other one is Shomer Mitzvah. Someone does a mitzvah, you know, davarah. Over here, we see that this case is, it says, specifically it says, Kima Amaro, you do it like it says in the Torah. You do, whoever does a mitzvah, Kima, like, the Gemara sticks in the word, as it was commanded. Now, how do you know you're keeping the mitzvah as it was commanded? Maybe you're doing it wrong. You know, there's no guarantee you're doing it right. So it seems like it's a theoretical halacha. It's saying, theoretically, God will protect you, but you can't go out and do it outright because you might not do it right. And this is also, on the way back, they're not protected. Why not? Because you have to be involved in the mitzvah the whole time. So if you decide you want to, you know, people give up people a dollar when they go to on a plane so that when they give tzedakah to the shliach mitzvah. That's not a shliach mitzvah. The main reason you're going is because you want to eat. You want a vacation. It happens to be you're a shliach mitzvah on the side. So that's not the same thing. A shliach mitzvah is you're involved in the mitzvah because you're actually doing, you're a shliach. You're doing what you have to do to perform the mitzvah. This is it's a nice, cute thing to do, but it's not necessarily going to save you from a plane crashing down because that's not what shliach mitzvah really is. And additionally, someone doesn't think about doing the mitzvah the whole time, even when they do mitzvah. So when you're in shul, this can go very wrong. You can't rely on this to save your life. So but there are other arguments that are very clear also. There's some opinions that say this doesn't apply in any real danger. In other words, you can't rely on it for a real dangerous situation. That's the opinion of the Achiezer, the Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, the Eliezer, and the Chassam Sofer. Basically, they say in different ways that if it's a real sakana, real danger, you can't rely on mitzvahs, you can't rely on being a shliach, you can't rely on doing any of these things. Another opinion says, there's other opinions that say that this is talking about doing things in normal life, like driving. Driving is very dangerous, but it's part of normal life that you do. Childbirth. Childbirth is very dangerous, but it's part of normal life. So these are things we do. Walking down the street could be dangerous. I mean, anything could be dangerous, but God will protect you in those situations. But it's not saying in a real danger, again, in a real dangerous situation. And this is also the Achiezer says this, that you have being Omer, being Sin, and the Ravitch of a Rav. All these opinions say that this is an exception, clear exceptions. The another amazing thing is the Gemara says, I don't know if you have this Gemara here. Yeah. Here, anyone read Rabbi Hanina says?
Rabbi Hanina says, this phrase, all sickness, refers to the cold. As Rabbi Hanina says, all occurrences, oops.
Mute. She's still talking, but she's mute.
What's that?
She's mute.
Mute.
Except for excess cold and heat, as it is stated, cold and heat are on the path of the perverse. He who guards his soul shall keep far from them. This indicates that cold and heat are forms of harm caused by man from which one can protect himself.
You see, this is a famous Gemara. Everything's in the hands of God except for cold, getting cold, getting sick. So being sick is your responsibility. You can't say God's going to protect me. You have a responsibility to not become sick. So for you to say that God's going to protect me from COVID is exactly the opposite of what Gemara says about God. What's in God's realm? It's in your realm to protect yourself. You can't just say God's going to protect me. That's not okay. So it's amazing. It just specifically says it like when you're sick. And I think the most convincing argument, which is the Ritva, which is a Rishon, where the Ritva says that these rules only apply to the Eved. I mean, after the fact, if you're in a situation, you find yourself in the jungle. And you're a shlich mitzvah. So what are you gonna do? You didn't plan to go to the jungle. You end up in the jungle. You're in danger. God's gonna protect you. But you can't say I'm going to the jungle because I wanna. I'm doing a mitzvah. He can't go put yourself in a dangerous situation. You can't just walk off a cliff and say God's gonna protect me because I'm doing a mitzvah. It's only after the fact. And I think this is the approach that I think we have to take with the shul. Is that you can't say I'm going outright to do something if it's dangerous. And I think that it's arguable. I'm not saying it's a clear thing, but I think this is a logical way to look at things, is that you can't rely on God when it comes to danger, because if you're not taking responsibility, if you're just saying God's gonna protect me, it's only b'dieved after the fact. And I think this idea fits into the Chazon Ish. Amazing Chazon Ish. This is quoted in an argument Rabbi Beckhoffer wrote on COVID and Shalom Pesam Hashem, God protecting. Very, very technical article, but he writes over here. He writes his opinion about the Chazon Ish's word. I won't get into what the Chazon Ish said because it's a little complicated. Speaking about cooking for a child who's sick on Shabbos, and he says basically you're allowed to do it, but some people don't do it, and he says it's not wrong not to do it. This is what his conclusion is. So I want to read much from the first paragraph.
Much can be learned from an analysis of the Chazon Ish. For our purposes, we see that pekuach nefesh, or safei sakana, is not defined by hard and fast parameters, but rather is often subjective and based on the level of bitachon that a person is in a questionable situation possesses.
A lot of people use this term bitachon. They have trust in God. Like, you're going to place yourself in a dangerous situation. I trust God. I mean, so the question is, can you do that? So the Chazon Ish, the way he defines it, is his famous work, Emunah Bitachon. He defines bitachon. Bitachon means trust in God. He says there's two things. Emunah Bitachon. Emunah means belief in God. Belief in God, the way I understand what Chazon Ish says, is belief means you have this belief that God exists. It's a general belief that there's a God in the world. Bitachon is how you apply that belief to your life. Trust in God is how you apply that. That's subjective. It's God in me. And I think this is borne out from Yosef and Pinchas. Yosef was, it says by Yosef that he trusted God. And the verse that David HaMelech wrote, Baruch HaGever Asher Yitzach Hashem Vayashem Miktachol, we say in benching, blessed be the man who believes in God, and Hashem is his trustworthy being in his life, meaning that you trust in God together. The individual person trusts in God, but Hashem miftacho, again in the singular, that the individual is one who trusts in God. Why? Because trust is an individual effort. Everyone has their own level of trust. Everyone trusts different things and different levels. And so everyone's, when it comes to trust, it's not like I believe in God. I believe in God in my life. It's very different. And that's what Yosef's whole life was about. He was an individual that was thrown into a situation in Egypt where he didn't have control over it. He didn't set out to go to Egypt. He was found himself in that situation. So he trusted in God, that God was doing for him what was meant for him to be done. And he trusted God in his life, in his individual life. But it's not something we can necessarily take to our lives, because the trust in God that happened was b'diavad, was after the fact. Like the Ritva says, after the fact, you're in the situation. Then you have to try your best to model your situation with trust in God, bringing that into your life. Pinchas, the same thing. Pinchas was a kana. He was a zealot. And the question everyone asks, I always ask, is that we see these zealots who say, they make these zealot societies where they throw acid at women who aren't dressed properly in Meir Sharim, and they and they throw rocks at cars on Shabbos. That they think they're modeling Pinchas, but Pinchas was totally different. Pinchas, his situation was, it was after the fact. He made a spontaneous decision. It was a one-time decision in his life. It was a very unique situation. It was situational. It was personal. He had a personal thing against what was going on, and he felt he had to do something about it, and it wasn't clear who was doing the right thing even. It's a rare situation. It's spontaneous. It's not something that you plan. You can't plan to be a zealot. That's the bottom line. Zealotry is something that comes from your guts, who you are on the inside, on the moment. So this is what I think is Yosef and Pinchas are models for B'tachem. B'tachem means there's certain situations in my life I feel like I need to go to shul, even though it's COVID. Fine, so you feel that you this passion, you got to do it, but that doesn't mean that everyone does it. Everyone's not supposed to do that. Maybe you feel like you don't need the vaccine, but that doesn't mean the general population should get the vaccine. If you have your own thing, you think that you should rely on. But again, I feel that someone needs to be educated. That you can't just do it because you're an angry person or you just feel like doctors are idiots. You have to be someone who think normally and you say, my sister-in-law is very, very passionate about this. She's not against the vaccine, but she has a lot of things against the pharmaceutical companies and she doesn't trust them. So she has this idea that one should not just take the vaccine. She thinks she should take it. She's going to take it anyway. But she's a reasoned person. She makes sense what she's saying. So it doesn't mean she's right, but it means that's the path where someone feels passionate about it. And that's the path they should take. But in general, one should try to look at life as more generic. In other words, it's not just you're just being a rebel because you feel like being a rebel. It's that you see what's logical and what's in front of you.
What about the thought that taking the vaccine to create herd immunity, you are helping the Kal Yisrael, and that you have a moral obligation to be vaccinated, not just to protect yourself, but to protect other vulnerable people in the community?
Makes a lot of sense. I mean, that's a logical argument to say the person should take the vaccine 100%.
Except
it's not known yet whether the vaccine will keep a person from transmitting the virus to the next person. Now, if it were known and proven that it does prevent transmission,
It's herd immunity is a different argument. Herd immunity means that if everyone's not going to get the vaccine, large percent of the population, then it's going to be we create herd immunity. It's different from saying that I personally will not infect somebody else.
And the other thing is just talk about measles, mumps, and rubella. There are people who refuse to take that vaccine, but don't they halakhically have a moral obligation to take it to protect the community?
So that's a good point. So I think that that's part of the logical progression a person has to go with. And a person should take that into consideration. I'm saying that someone who thinks differently is not violating the Torah, but they would have to be really have this personal thing that they feel strongly about not taking it. But if a person just says, I don't want to take it, then I think you're right. I think it's a responsibility that they have towards the Klal. And that it's part of a person's obligation. But again, it would seem that from the words of Rav Asher Weiss, he seems to say that it's not an obligation. It's just it's something that it's very strongly suggested that someone should do that.
What do you feel? Do you think it's an obligation or just something that they should?
So I'm not necessarily on the level of someone to make that decision, but I think to go against that, say that it should be mandated. But I think that your point is well taken. I don't think you addressed that point, that the herd immunity point could be a reason to say that person has an obligation to the community to do it. But at the same time, I didn't look through the medical arguments to know that for certain. But I think that if it is for certain, then that would be a stronger argument to say that it should be something that is an obligation on a person to do. Again, unless there's a reason they shouldn't do it. Some people are allergic to this, the allergies. It could be something that people aren't aware of. It could be not safe, but people don't know for sure if it's 100% safe. But again, barring all that, then I think it's you're making a strong argument.
Rabbi, with regard to those who feel, well, if I'm doing this mitzvah, then Hashem will protect me. It seems like the counter argument to that is that it's not like a formula that, all right, well, no harm can possibly occur to me if I do a mitzvah. Therefore, if I do mitzvahs, then I'm guaranteed to have this safe, cushy life with all these good things happening. I mean, obviously it doesn't work that way. And it would be, we would have, our motives wouldn't be really pure if we were doing mitzvahs because we were afraid that, hey, if I don't do these mitzvahs, God's going to send all these punishments. You know, it's just not as quid pro quo like that. We're supposed to do our share and God's share is up to God.
100%. That's what the Gemara says. The Gemara says that mitzvahs, you don't get reward for mitzvahs in this world. That's the whole point. The Gemara is saying that basically reward for mitzvahs is the reward that comes for a reason, not just because this world is not the place for reward. It's because the reason this world is not a place for the world reward is because if we did things for the reward only and we saw them, you know, before our eyes, then we wouldn't be doing the mitzvah for the right reasons. We're doing it for selfish reasons. We're not doing it for relationship with God. And that's a big flaw in doing mitzvahs that way, 100%. That's basically the argument Gemara is making. And that's why it doesn't make sense to say that you're doing the mitzvah for reward in this world, because it's not true. It's not even, besides the fact that it's a wrong way to look at things, it's just not going to happen. That's why it specifically says that Shom Mitzvah Devara says that you have to do it exactly the way the mitzvah says, because most people can't necessarily do that. It's not a simple thing to do. And you can't define it, say, I'm going to get something out of this, because you don't know if you're doing it correctly. It's something that only happens after the fact. It's not something that you can plan for, because that's the whole problem with doing things for the reward, is you're planning for, you're manipulating the mitzvah to get something out of it. And that's wrong. That's the opposite of relationship, the opposite of love. Love is something that's spontaneous, something that's you do this because you love someone, not because you're planning to manipulate them to do what you want and get reward from them. Does that make sense? Okay, so we'll just finish off with the bracha shachianu. Rachel wanted to know if you make the shachianu. So the bottom line answer is no, you don't say shachianu. And the reason is because, look here, two reasons. Erevin, someone read this from when it came to the house of study, right here, this paragraph.
When I came to the house of study of Rav Yehuda, he said, I recite the blessing for time, even on a new gourd, and I certainly recite the blessing on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. I said to him, I have no dilemma about the fact that one has the option of reciting the blessing for time. The dilemma I have is about whether there is an obligation to recite the blessing. What is the halakha in this regard? Rav Yehuda said to me that it was Rav and Shmuel who both said one recites the blessing for time only on the three pilgrim festivals.
So what we get from this Gemara is that there's two types of brachas of Shechianu, two reasons to say it. One is a reshus, one's a chova. Chova means it's an obligation. That will be on Yontif. Yontif, at least a shalosh and balam, but on Yontif is an obligation, because the sages said you have to say Shechianu on Yontif, and that's part of the prayers of the holiday that were set in stone that you have to say. There's other one which is reshus. It's not an obligation. It's not mandatory. It's optional. An optional bracha is shachianu would fall under the category of on something good happening to you is in the category of optional bracha. So that's one reason why it's not clear. The question, what does it mean? What does it mean optional? Some say optional means you don't have to buy a new suit. You don't have to get a fruit. And therefore, you don't have to say Shachianu because you don't have to get those things. But if you get those things, you have to say it. So that would be a different approach. But if you say Rosh Hashanah is optional bracha, then there's actually some opinions that say that we don't say ever say, they don't say brachas, the sons or chassidim, they don't say brachas on fruits or good tidings or seeing a new person you haven't seen in a while, because they say it's a rishus, it's not an obligation, therefore suffik brachas hakol. You say that if it's a doubt whether you should say a bracha or not, it's, you're lenient about it, so you shouldn't say it. There are others' opinions that say that you only say shachrin on something that is good inherently. A vaccine is preventing bad. That's very different than good. It might be making you very happy, but it's not necessarily something that's inherently good. Other opinions say that shachrin is only said something tangible. You have something, you have clothing, you have fruit, you have something tangible in your hand, you have a baby. But this is something that's not tangible. A vaccine is not tangible. You could see the world from right in front of you. I mean, it hurts. I mean, that's not the happiness. Happiness isn't the sting in your arm and the blood that comes out. That's not tangible. Therefore, you don't say shachrin on the situation. And I think I have another personal understanding of it, that shachrin is only said on a body, something that's you're definitely happy about. So, for instance, if you look at the Shulchan Aruch, it's very interesting halacha. People ask me this a lot. So I want to read this. I'll read it. Yodah Isha Zachar. So the Shulchan Aruch says if his wife gives birth to a boy, this is a very chauvinistic halacha. Baruch Tova Meitiv. Say a Tova Meitiv. You say Shachriyano for in plural. Tova Meitiv is Shachriyano in plural. And the wife has to say it as well. In Mesa Ishto, okay, fine. Then it goes, V'yeshikasu Shinogol. Where are we? A second. I think it's in 225. Let's see. I'm not sure where it is, but basically the Shulchan Aruch said, the Ramah says that the custom nowadays is not to say a bracha, in his day was not to say a bracha on a girl. A boy you say shachan, a girl you don't say shachan. So that's what I was saying, it's a very chauvinistic halacha. But I think the reason is because back then in the time of the Ramah, to have a girl was a big stress on people because they felt like they had to pay for their, you know, like in Israel now, you have to pay for the apartment and you have to pay for a dowry and all this stuff, and it becomes, and the girl doesn't work for a living. The things that people looked at having girls is like in China, they look at girls as a negative. But nowadays we don't look at it that way. Women are just as capable as men in our society. So I think that back then they said, well, it's not a complete simcha. But nowadays there is a complete simcha when you have a girl, and therefore I think it's wrong not to say shachrin. I think that's my opinion about that. What should one say then? Shitzah Shulchan Aruch and Simon Samach Aleph says, before you get a, this is the Hakis Dam, which is a bloodletting. Someone read this before undergoing surgery?
Before undergoing surgery or before eating or drinking something as a remedy or taking a treatment for a cure, you should first recite the following brief prayer. May it be your will, Hashem, our God, and the God of our forefathers, for this measure may serve me as a cure, for you are a gratuitous healer. And if the substance which you eat or drink for medicinal purposes require that you say a bracha over it, you should first offer this prayer.
Just go to the end. It says after bloodletting.
Oh, yeah. After bloodletting, I'm sorry. After bloodletting, say the following bracha. Baruch at Adonai, Eloheinu melech haolam rofi holim. Blessed are you, Hashem, our God, King of the universe, who heals the sick.
I think this is a good, this is a sourced prayer to say before one undergoes a procedure. I think that the bracha at the end should be said without God's name, because it's not simple that one says, many opinions say you shouldn't say God's name. So therefore, this is the source. Someone wants a source, they could email me, and I'll send it to them. But you say before you get the shot, you say, and after you get the shot, you should say, Baruch Rofei Cholim. Does that make sense? So this is sourced, and it's much, I think it's much more appropriate than Saint Shachrin. Okay, so God willing, we should see the
end. Rabbi, is that found anywhere in the Art Scroll Siddur? Do you know?
I don't know. It's a good question. I don't know. It's there. It could be there.
Wait, I also want to know, because there are quotes here. Where is the prayer from? Like the beginning one. May it be your will, Hashem, our God.
It's based on a Gemara. Yeah.
Okay.
Blood, it says surgery, but it really means bloodline. The Talmud has a lot of pieces of bloodline. But it basically means a medical procedure. Any other questions?
Rabbi, is it possible for you to email a copy of that all of us?
Sure.
Rabbi, what's the halakha of telling friends or family that if they want to come over to our home, they would need to have been vaccinated?
So these are personal questions. This question is, as long as you make your decision based on medical evidence that makes sense, I think that you can make either argument. Some people feel comfortable, some people don't. I think that's legit. I think it's legit for a person to feel. Again, if you feel like you're affecting other people, like Bruce said, that may be something to take into consideration. But if you feel that strongly about it, then I don't think that's crazy. I mean, that's just basically up to your persuasion, what you feel. And that's really the bottom line for this year, is that there's really a lot of it's subjective, but a lot of once you get past the first step of the most scientists and doctors say that this is the right thing to do, there's a lot of gray area that depends on the person's perspective. Does that make sense?
I'm going to get a copy of the prayer. Anybody wants it, you could just email the shul and I'll send it to you.
Thanks. That'd be great.
Hey, thank you so much for coming, and God willing, we will see the last shiur we have to give on this topic. Everything we should all become immune, and God willing, get back to life as back to normal.
Well, Mashiach is coming, so we'll be in Jerusalem by Shabbos, so and I will be cured. So that is all mute.
Rabbi, thank you so very much.
Pleasure. It's a pleasure. Thank you for the request.
Thank you, everybody.
All right.
Good night, everyone.
Thank you, Rabbi Hirsch.
Thank you. Psych is done.